Welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave Fukushima-irradiated South African Pacific. My very special guest right now is coming at us from his new home in California. He made it, ladies and gentlemen, and no small thanks to you, the audience, as well, those of you who donated and things of that nature, is James Wright. And unfortunately, we've just had a little bit of a connectivity issue with his Skype there, and he seems to have dropped off. Don't know what's going on there. AFR, if you can hear me, could you please try and reconnect James, if that's at all possible? Now, James, are you there? James, are you there? Can you hear me? Having a little bit of a problem with the audio there. James, please type in a phone number.
And hello.
We've got you. We've got you. Do you want to put in a phone number into the chat here so that we can give you a call on that if your Skype drops out again? Okay, so we've got it there. All right. Well, there's been a hell of a lot of stuff that has gone down, my friend. And AFR, let's connect James up on that phone number that he's just popped into the chat there, because his connection seems to be dropping out quite consistently. Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know this, but I kind of have this this thing where the number 33 appears all the time, like all the time. And like one, and I think one day I tried to take pictures of all these times that I saw number 33, and I think I managed to take about half a dozen in a day. And I think it occurred two or three other times during that day, but I wasn't able to take screenshots or take video pictures of it or anything. Okay, it's incidentally right now because I've got 33 unanswered messages on my Skype. All right, James, I believe we've got you on the phone now.
Yes, in a manner. I don't know what that was. Everything was fine right up until that very second you introduced me, and then the feed just stopped. And your face froze, and I have a full connection. So
yeah, it's really strange how that happens sometimes. But why don't you let people in on these conversations that you and I have been having behind the scenes, to do with the mental hospital and your trip to California and New Falcon books and all of that?
Yeah, so it's been my God, a rough last 2-3 weeks. And on one hand, I owe you a huge thanks just for, you know, helping get the word out and everything, which wouldn't have happened if I didn't remember those old 80s, you know, phone fracking techniques. Remember, like in the movie Hackers, where he taps the receiver a certain way when he's in jail and he's able to dial a different number than what he's supposed to dial. And that's what I had to do, to call a childhood friend whom I trust to say where I was, what was going on, and to please get in touch with you. So, what happened was, I have to go back in the story a little bit in time so you'll understand why I ended up where I did. I have not spoken with my mother in 13 years. My mother is obviously a very high-profile member of this, you know, bloodline family that I come from and everything, and certainly was an avid ritualist back in her heyday. She's a very, well, I don't want to get into all of it, it's just a little bit too personal, but needless to say, she's not that nice of a person. We haven't spoken in 13 years. And then I found out back in December that she had been battling breast cancer. So naturally, as a human being that cares about the fate of people, you know, whether good or bad, I reached out to her and we began speaking for the first time in 13 years. And I was really astonished because It seemed to me that that battle with cancer, which she triumphed over, to her credit, I mean, she's a strong little woman, and so that's great, and she won the battle. I got the impression, even though I was suspicious, that, you know, it had spawned some sort of soul-searching, and that she was a changed woman for the better. And I had one of my old childhood friends call her up and speak to her as well, and she also concluded the same. I had two other childhood friends, though, that warned me, you know, run, don't walk, and I quote. And it turns out, I'm afraid, that they were correct. Even though we had some good conversations and everything, you know, the circumstances in my life were still rapidly deteriorating just in the Masons' pursuit of me and their harassment. I mean, it never ends. And so, you know, I had described all of that to my mother in our conversations that we were having. She knew where I was, the ranch I was hiding out on down in South Texas, and, you know, so forth. And even at one point made the suggestion that, you know, maybe perhaps she should come down and help move me back home to Dallas, which, you know, we pondered over, but nothing ever happened with it. In the meantime, you know, I was back into a corner in many, many ways, one of which would be financially because of the ramifications of, you know, what I have done. And I told her, you know, I'm broke, I'm starving, I have nowhere to go, and then the friends I was staying with on the ranch I was on, they moved back to where they're from. So I was essentially made, you know, homeless. And I mean, it was just a comedy of errors that led to what happened. So I decided, okay, I don't want to freeze to death at night in my car, which I'm clearly going to be living out of. My mother was expressing no interest in bringing me back at this point, and I'm sure I know the reasons why. Incidentally, she was blaming, in the conversations we were having, all of the stuff with the Freemasons on my aunt, and where my aunt used to blame it all on her, and you know, it's just that sort of sickness that I've had another fresh lesson that I need to stay clear and far from. So, anyway, you know, I'm down in, I go further south into Texas, onto Padre Island, to be exact, and because I figure, you know, I won't freeze there at night, it just doesn't get that cold there. I'll have about a steady 80-degree temperature day and night, and you know, I'll at least be comfortable despite being homeless. And that lasted about a week before I was suffering from malnutrition and dehydration. So I was talking to a friend, and she said, call your mother, reach out to her, tell her what's going on, you know, don't hold back, let her know the stark reality of the situation. So I did. And my mother responded by going on a vacation. that's just, you know, I have to laugh because that's who we're dealing with here. So anyway, I was advised to go check myself into the hospital where I was at and get treated for malnutrition, dehydration, and so forth, and massive anxiety, and so on. And so I did. I went to the nice hospital there in town. And all I remember is that night I went to sleep. They had all the little things hooked up to me, and they were, you know, feeding me and all this. And I went to sleep, and then the next morning I woke up in the back of an ambulance, and I knew I was under heavy sedation. I mean, I had been given something because I was, you know, effed up, and it was just very obvious, and it seemed like it was morning. I mean, the morning sun was out, so that's the only thing I have to go by, really, but I was in the back of an ambulance with two police, an EMT, and an attorney. Very small female attorney, just like a black or whatever. And, you know, I asked where I was and what was going on, and all they would say is, you're being transported to another facility. And I'm like, okay, so what, is there a shortage of beds? You know, what's going on? And this small woman who was the attorney then enters the conversation and hands me paperwork. This paperwork is, and I'm able to read. I may be under the influence of some sort of medication that they put in me, but I am able to read. And I read this because this woman is telling me to sign it. Well, I did not sign it because what it was a document my mother had drafted up where I would be signing over all of my power of attorney of book contracts, radio contracts, everything to do with the work I do over to her. And this is a woman who has multiple times in her life made bad moral decisions at the behest of Freemasons, whether her own father or whomever, a boyfriend, so on. And I looked at this. It was basically the ability to be destroyed, signed here. And I tore it up into 1,000 pieces and threw it all over the ambulance. Well, that was not what they wanted. So I was punished for that, and I was taken to a facility that I can only best describe as a 1940s Russian gulag. It was a very old, decaying, mind-control facility where in which I had all... I mean, I've never worn a pair of handcuffs. I've never been arrested. I'm good, you know, never done anything wrong. But this was pretty much what I would expect the experience to be like, and that's just how it started. Pardon me, I've been on the phone about all day. My voice is a little scratchy. Are you there, Vinny?
Yeah.
Okay. So they took everything from me, all my possessions, my clothes. I had to put on, you know, a paper gown. And to make a long story short, an average day inside this place, you were fed disgusting gruel three times a day, had all kinds of psychotropic, you know, mind drugs experimented with on me, that which I could not hide or conceal in my mouth long enough to spit out later. And, you know, you were, even though I wasn't trying to do anything, I was trying to do what they wanted me to do so I could play the game and get out of there as quickly as possible. But, you know, I had to spend my days tied to chairs and watching in the mornings Sesame Street, which I found really bizarre. And then during the middle part of the day, we were actually kind of allowed to wonder, but if we started commingling or asking for a phone or anything, it was, you know, back to your straps for you. And then at night, there was either some sort of Disney movie that we were supposed to watch, or for whatever reason, again, Christina Aguilera music videos. Not sure why. And I tried my best to just grit my teeth, tune this all out, play their game, and get out as quickly as possible, which, of course, I did. After 5 days, they had to release me because the doctors had no reason to keep me. They were trying to say that I was being treated for and kept there for schizophrenia, but there is no diagnosis on paper. And anyone that thinks that I'm making this up, I mean, you can call the medical authorities and, well, no, that'd be a HIPAA violation. But no, I can produce documentation, I'll put it that way instead, that I do not have any kind of diagnosis of schizophrenia. I do have bipolar disorder, I will admit, they found. That, for what that's worth, you know, we'll just take that with a grain of sand at face value, you know. that's a whole other story, a whole other debate. But anyway,
in my opinion, bipolar is like sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. It's called frickin' life.
Right. Exactly. So you know, that aside, whether I am or whatever, I'm just really not interested in the doctors there. And then there was, of course, no diagnosis of schizophrenia, like they kept claiming I was there for, and treating me as such. And so I get out, and you know, you had successfully got the message out, and I got enough assistance going to where I could actually afford to physically get myself to California. And my publisher, New Falcon, has been most gracious in providing me a lot of resources and safe haven and a very, very high amount of security. I must say I'm impressed with the security. You would have to come through three layers of gates and walls and such right in the middle of urban, active L.A. to even have the ability to knock on my door. So I do at least feel safe at the moment. That's fantastic. You know, I'm not out of the woods yet. I'm still broke. I'm still struggling. But I'm just taking it a day at a time and trying to not be too battered by what the people inside the net keep dishing out, and not just to me, but to others I know. And, you know, I got to L.A. very, very early yesterday morning and had a nap, woke up, and then more tragedy.
Well, let's talk about this tragedy after the break, ladies and gentlemen. It's a bit of a cliffhanger with even more intrigue and subterfuge with James Wright after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Get on the horn and tell people to tune into this broadcast right now. You're not going to want to miss this.
Look at me driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that goes where others fear to tread. And we've pretty much been everywhere, especially with my very special guest, James. Right now, in the UK, was it just this morning that you received the news or something? What are we talking about here?
Yesterday morning. And by the way, are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Okay. Yeah, I've been experiencing very anomalous communication and disruptions all day yesterday and today. So, yeah, I'm here. I just get in, have a nap, speak with my publisher, and I'm literally unpacking, and the phone rings, and it's the fiance of a very good friend of mine, and he's a bit of a controversial figure, but people out there listening can just take my word on it that he is a good man, a total scholar and very influential figure of our time. I highly suggest his works. His name is Nicholas Devere. Some know him as Prince Nicholas Devere. He's royal, Hungarian prince. He is the head of the Priory of Sion, and of course, owner of the Dragon Court. Yeah, we'd been friends for quite some time all throughout my tenure in Freemasonry when the things that happened to me did. He was very sympathetic. He took my side. He was a very outspoken supporter of the work I'm trying to do and, you know, the reform I'm trying to push for and everything else. And he sort of joined up with me, and we've had a lot of good times and so on, and really made a lot of progress. And he, you know, opened doors for me at the European Union, which really allowed me to push for what I'm pushing for politically, globally, all that. And so, you know, I will always be very grateful to him. And the phone rings. I'm unpacking. It's his fiance. And they had just bought a second house. She had been there during the week, attending school, getting things you know, I guess put where they wanted them and decorated it and whatnot. And he had stayed behind at their old house on the west coast of Wales. And so she went home for the weekend. It was nighttime there and morning here for me. And when she got there, she found that he had been murdered. And when I say murdered, I mean overkill, a hit of the highest levels. Nicholas Devere is dead. And there is a complete media blackout on this. And the police in the UK are acting extraordinarily stupid. I went to them, I contacted them with my diplomatic credentials that Nicholas supplied me with in the event of an emergency such as this, and said, you know, demanded to know what's going on, demanded to see the progress in their investigation, everything. And I was told that the way he was found and everything has one simple explanation, that he had a heart attack. Well, let me tell you how he was found. And if there are children listening, you might want to shoo them away for a moment. She found him naked. There were lacerations suggesting some sort of ritualized whatever. And it was very evident that he fought very hard for his life, because the whole room that he was in was destroyed, as in, like, the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They go to kill each other, and really all they do is destroy the room in the process. Well, that's sort of what it looked like. I mean, it just demolition, complete destruction. And he put up a hard fight against his assailant, and he didn't win, and so he's dead. And all the work, he is the man responsible for the Freemasons recently having their rights to the Knight Templar material revoked. He is the man who is responsible for the call politically to have the Scottish Rite shut down globally, calling for all of Freemasonry to be reformed and complete transparency in it, just like I am. And that is all now finished. All our work, all of it, is now gone. And he is gone. And it's, I mean, I'm still in a state of shock. I have certain duties as cultural attaché that he appointed me as that I have to fulfill. I don't even know what to expect next. I don't know. I might have some phone calls from attorneys or politicians, or you know, I don't even know how much longer my .eu email address will be active. I mean, because he's gone, and the scope of our work is gone. And you know, the books that he wrote were that made him quite famous were the Dragon Legacy and the Dragon Seed, C-E-D-E, and they touched a lot of people's lives. He was like a father figure to so many of us from these corrupted, screwed-up bloodline families. He himself is bloodline, but, you know, he understands, and that's why he was a mentor to so many. And he will be greatly missed, and no one even knows about this because there's a complete media blackout on it. And the police are sitting there saying, oh, he had a heart attack. And in the process of this heart attack, destroyed every item virtually, plus walls, plus an entire room of his house, while stripping naked and evidently cutting himself. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's once again corruption within the House of Windsor and Freemasonry working hand in hand, to do the most awful things, and I cannot believe that he had to depart this earth that way. I mean, it just kills me to think about it. I mean, he at least deserved the dignity of dying an old man, you know, peaceful in his bed, and he was denied that. He was assassinated in a very sadistic manner, Vinny, and I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know. I was on the phone with the FBI earlier, and, you know, no one is addressing the issue. And this talk of heart attack has got me just furious, you know, because his fiance called me first. I got the information first, so I know what was going on there while the police were still there. And what they're saying now is, which they're not saying anything to the press, but what they're saying to us is complete BS. And knowing him as I did, he would be absolutely furious with it, and he'd be raising hell. So, you know, a lot of people are going to mourn this man and his passing, unnatural passing, because he had a lot of years left, a lot of things left that he wanted to do. We were working tirelessly to come up with political solutions, peaceful solutions, to put an end to the current awful, awful ways of Freemasonry and their global dominance. And I don't even know what's coming tomorrow now, because he was my strongest supporter, still within, you know, a higher echelon environment. And so I'm sort of feeling like the lone wolf at the moment, you know? It's very difficult. So.
Yeah. Well, it occurs to me that within the UK and the police force, I think I saw a documentary once that said that about maybe a third of sworn officers are also sworn Masons, who value their membership to Freemasonry above their membership to the to the police force. So these kind of cover-ups become almost certain that kind of a hand of masonry involved.
Stories. You're absolutely right. He's told me plenty of stories over the years and about that. And if ever he had legal issues, he would deal with being a prince and a diplomat. You know, he had the luxury of being able to just deal direct with Interpol. But and he would, you know, accomplish some amazing results whenever he was threatened or had legal problems or what have you. So he knew not to trust the police, and he would be absolutely mortified at the way that this is all being handled. And you know, the stark reality of it is that everyone that had associations with him closely is now in danger, and there's people that I still haven't even gotten around to calling yet. You know, this has been an ongoing thing all day long. I've had to recharge my phone 3 times just to make the phone calls I have, and it's got a long battery life. So, you know, that is crucial to say that if any of them are listening, I'm not talking about a lot of people here, but if you were associated with the work we were doing at the EU, then your life is now in danger, because they got to him and he was an untouchable, so we thought. You know, he's the head of the frickin' Priory of Zion, and he's been bumped off. But he's been very outspoken over the years. A lot of people know from his work against some of his family members, by which I mean the House of Windsor. So, you know, he was very taken aback by their actions over Diana and everything. He was one of the good ones. He was like the diamond in the rough of a very, very dysfunctional and sick family, you know, back to that subject of bloodlines, which he has written extensively about. He was the world's foremost expert on that because he was an insider willing to speak about it. And, you know, now he's gone. So,
What do you do? You know, and that's the kind of position I think you've kind of found yourself in, is that you've got these incredibly dangerous, evil people whose power is virtually limitless, and now they're threatening all the people that are, and all the work that's been done to expose and overthrow them, just like that. And nobody knows.
It's like 5 years of what we've worked on went up one puff of smoke in 1 second.
Well, see, at least on the bright side, we are talking about it on air now, so at the very least the listeners to this broadcast know about it. But I try to help people, when, especially in their time of need, James, and I hope that I have helped you with these last couple of weeks and months and whatnot that you've been on the run, and now you're at least somewhere safe.
Yeah, you've become one of my closest friends. I mean, Vinny, you're the real deal, and I trust you more than I would trust. You know, this latest thing with my mother, I mean, it was such a personal and trying matter for me to be tackling again in my life that, you know, I've been able to weed out a couple more friends who were not really friends, who were serving other interests. And, you know, there's such a sickness right now in the world with all these lies and injustices and things being done. And, you know, they're losing this battle against us, the truthers / patriots of the world. But it's very slow. It's very painful, a very painful death for them. They're going out with absolute, just marquee de Sade, sick, sadistic actions toward others, and they just need to be stopped. They need to stop. They need to be stopped. It's so far gone out of control. I mean, I feel relatively physically safe at the moment. But that's not to say that any one of the people walking down the street I'm on, which is a major thoroughfare here in Los Angeles, could be suspicious. You know, it's like that scene in The Matrix with the woman in the red dress. It's just anybody could be an agent right now is sort of the thing. So, you know, I'm behind secure, gated walls times three. You know, physically, I'm fine at the moment, but it's just this crazy now.
Well, you can't live your life under frickin' house arrest, can you?
No. I mean, I'm going out later to see a very dear friend, Lon Milo Duquette, who every time I see him, something extraordinarily good happens in my life. So I'm hoping, you know, that such will be the case again.
Maybe you're due for some good news, James. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with James Wright at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back in just a few minutes. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment here with James Francis Wright today. Maybe you can hear it in the background, but I now have a black helicopter hovering above my flat.
Really?
But you know, we'll just let them have their fun, won't we? I don't know why, and it just freaks me out a little bit. The American Freedom Radio Board also, as you might have noticed before the break, we didn't hear the break music, and it jumped, like it delayed by about a minute or something like that. So we've got even less time to have on the radio now. And on top of that, your Skype was working perfectly, and then it just suddenly malfunctioned, keep having all these artificial drop-offs and stuff like that. And I'm reminded of what happened with the interview I did with Tila Tequila when she started to go public and coming out about the Illuminati on this show as well. Similar type of things.
Yes, I've heard that interview, and I really would like to reach out to her now that I'm in the L.A. area. Perhaps we could meet up or, you know, something. I would just like to compare war stories, if nothing else, because based on the interview I heard you conduct, I mean, the things that she said, there's no way for her to possibly know them unless she's telling the truth, because I've experienced very much so the same. She's just experienced it from an entertainment industry perspective, where I've experienced it from a, you know, aristocratic family perspective. And this subject matter especially, you know, one of the highest level political assassinations of our time has just been executed, and no one even knows. And I'm on the air discussing this, and now you have a black helicopter, and God only knows what's going on down there on the other side of all these gates where I am in L.A. So, you know, it's just, oh, my God.
It's like, holy cow.
My Skype was working so good that we were actually going to do video for the first time in a while. And then right as you're introducing me, it just locks up. The computer's fine. The signal's huge. I'm in L.A. I'm getting the best signals on the earth.
See, it's fucking insane. And it occurs to me that as well that these people try to make you go nuts by making you question everything and be paranoid and suspicious and what have you. I don't give a frack that your Skype blocked that got dropped off. We got you on your phone instead. I don't give a frack that the video's not working. I'm going to take a couple of screenshots of the little bit of video that we did get of you, and I'm going to put them into the video. I don't care that there's a black helicopter hovering above me. He might be looking for something else, like people growing marijuana in their small basement apartments or something like that. I don't care. You know, I mean, so just so long as these fracks don't, you know, completely cut us off, and I don't have people with compass and square hammer and sickle type insignias on them, on their black hoods and garb and stuff like that, come in here and try and sacrifice me to some dark Lord of the Sith or something like that. I don't care. But
well, if they'll sacrifice ritually one of the top guys in the world, you know, as far as rank goes, when you get into the subject bloodline, everything that these people are into, right? They'll bump him off like that, which no one, my colleagues and I, ever thought would happen. But wonders never cease, right?
Yeah, it scares the heck out of you because I think me and Suzanne Poser were discussing before you came on the show is if you're keeping up to date with all the real bad stuff that's going on all around the place, you become really, really afraid and paranoid and it freaks you out. And you've got to find some way to de-stress and detach. But unfortunately, in cases such as yours, you're in it and there ain't no getting out.
Right, they've said themselves they still view me as property. They refer to me as property. I mean, I have this on tape. Masons calling from the Scottish Rite, ordering me here or there, you know, like I'm due on base. It's just, it's bizarre. And I ain't coming. in case they have not got the message yet, let me make this as crystal clear as I possibly can muster. I want nothing to do with any secretive order or society that operates underground in the dark and subscribes to blood oaths and bizarre practices with ritualized occultism and so forth. Any of you, you can all take a hike. I'm no. we are not having dealings with each other in the future, except me continuing to fight you and bring you down. The whole lot of you.
All of you frickin' scum. And I know that these people tune into these shows and things like that. And you even have dupe masons, I call them, you know, signing into the chat room sometimes when you're on, calling you a fraud and what have you. And they have no idea what they're talking about, under total mind control. And it's just, look, just think about this for a second. You're a mind control scumbag at best, and you're an evil satanic cultist at worst. What do you think is going to happen to you for the rest of your life? Do you think anything good, anything decent, is going to turn out for you because you're trying to demonize and destroy people who are trying to expose you? You've got nothing. You're filth.
No, it's just like JFK, and even that's been so misconstrued in the conspiracy tellings of the story. You know, we're led to believe that it's this and that in Cuba and Russia and blah, 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 and the Dallas Mafia. Give me a freaking break. What sealed his fate was when he made that famous speech in which he said, we need to do away with secret societies in 1961. In 63, he was dead. And who replaced him? LBJ, 32nd degree Freemason, a friend of my grandfather's, who was not a nice man, and everybody listening back in Texas whose jaws are hitting the floor, they can just get over it. I don't care how many freeways are named after him in Texas. He had a lovely wife, Lady Bird. I feel sorry for the woman that had to be married to that thing. I mean, these are men, and this was in the 60s, when they were, the Masons, that is, were truly, truly at the unbridled height of their power. You pick up the phone, brother, it's murder, it's whatever, it's done. Now they have to struggle a little bit more. But yeah, obviously still successful in some avenues, because one of the most illustrious figures, you know, larger than life, Nicholas Devere, who was fighting them, you know, in my ring, is now slain. And, I mean, how do you think that makes me feel? I almost feel responsible for it. Because, I mean, it's like, you know, because of his association with my cause or whatever. I mean, this is reaching epic proportions.
Jay, you can't blame yourself, man. You both of you knew the risks going in.
He predicted his own death. He said that he would be ritually killed in the manner he was, but he believed that would happen somewhere in America. Like if he was on a trip inside of America, it would happen. That what happened would happen here. He never thought that would happen in his own house in Wales.
See, look. I don't know what to say, James, and I don't think anybody anywhere would really know what to say to you, because this is your fight. You know it better than anybody else, and you've got so much strength just to be able to survive what you've already been through, let alone how bad things are going to get, and I believe they're probably going to get worse. Do you reckon so?
Oh, I don't want to indulge in pessimism, but, you know, yes, they probably will. Look at what's happened. I mean, Nick is dead, and there's, like, no justice. You know, I'd like some justice, please, and denied. So the FBI, of course, wanted to perform the Spanish Inquisition on everything. And you know what? I've turned over them all the links they need, all documents, everything to prove who wanted him dead and the motive and everything else. And are they listening to any of the cold, hard evidence that I have given them? No. So you want to heal this thing, you want to fix it, all secret societies must be made illegal globally, and you kill it. Because, see, Freemasonry has always survived public outcry because they've changed their name. Oh, we're not that anymore. Now we're this. Okay. No more.
But they're still the same freaking thing. And, you know, I encourage people, you know, a global boycott. You know, you're going in business with anybody who's a high-level Freemason? No. You're going to vote for anybody who's a high...
If they're a judge, if they're a lawyer, if they're a financier, if they're anything, if they're the janitor, it's a conflict of interest because they subscribe to murderous oaths that supersede...
James, I'm sorry, we've run out of time. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.